This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am back with my next guest, and this is a fascinating book. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Gary Simmons, I should say Dr. Gary Simmons, and the name of his book is Death's Pale Flag. Hello, Doctor.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me. It's truly an honor.
Well, it's a thrill for me to have you here because it's a subject that I'm interested in. And I thought, wow, when I got this book, I didn't know what to expect. And I think you've done it so cleverly. You've made the whole subject of a neurosurgeon interesting. So tell us about how you came out with this idea. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the title. The title is, let's say, you like Shakespeare?
Yes, I'm a bit of a Shakespeare nut. I tend to always have several books on him or his plays at the bedside. And it's a line right out of Romeo and Juliet. It's where Romeo first discovers Juliet and believes her to be dead. And he's commenting that she hasn't lost the blush in the cheeks of life. Hasn't gone pale with death, and so he's bemoaning that she's dead, but death's pale flag hasn't been hoisted yet.
And I thought that was a great title, anybody who remembers Romeo and Juliet, they'll remember that. And then we go on to this subject. It's about a doctor, and when I was young, I worked in a hospital in those days we could work as candy stripers. So I did that from the time I was 14. So I spent a lot of time in hospitals and getting to know doctors and seeing what life was like for them. So here you are writing a story about a surgeon. So tell us about your surgeon because a lot of it is, I think, based on your life, and it's your doctor's name is Ryan Brennan. Tell us about Ryan.
Well, part of what I wanted to do with the book is really give people a great glimpse, at least, behind the curtains of what's going on in modern medicine, and particularly in my world of neurosurgery and brain surgery. And I thought I could write it as nonfiction. I've written other nonfiction books, but I thought fiction would really be much more immersive for the readers and be able to kind of be there in the operating room with the main protagonist, Ryan. And so Ryan is a neurosurgeon. Ryan Brennan's a neurosurgeon. And he's definitely deeply invested in his patients and the care of his patients and their families. And he's in the mix of it. I mean, he's at a busy trauma center where lots of terrible things are coming in all the time. And when you're in a trauma center, it's not just trauma. It pulls in all the emergencies. And so he's just seeing awful things happening all the time to people. But he's overcommitted. You might put him in the workaholic category. And so his exposure to this world is near constant. And the wheels start to come off. He actually begins to see ghosts.
Yeah. So you sort of, when you think about it, you don't actually want your neurosurgeon to see ghosts. But it is such a difficult field. Well, being a doctor in general is very difficult, not from the academic or it's just emotionally such a strain. And the kind of work that neurosurgeons do, it's the strain on their entire being. It's enormous.
It certainly can be, and everybody's going to respond to it differently. The protagonist Ryan, in this case, is beginning to buckle under it. He's beginning to feel it too much, if you will. Now there are many who kind of go numb and don't feel it, and frankly, I may have been more in that category myself, where I was able to kind of wade through awful things many times a day and just move from one thing to another. But an interesting phenomenon happened when I retired from clinical neurosurgery a couple of years ago. And, pretty soon soon thereafter, I started experiencing things much more emotionally than I had been for the last 30-some years, where just, you know, things that are happy and things that are sad, they impacted me much, much more than they had been. And I think, you know, you throw up all these walls that may be protective, but they may not be all that good for you as well.
Well, it's true. For me, it's so funny. When I was young, when I worked in the hospital, and then I went on and I did some work in laboratories, so as a medical technology kind of stuff.
Sure.
I could take it. I could, you know, watch surgeries. I could, you know, be right there watching them cut people open, and it didn't bother me at all. I couldn't do that today if you paid me cash. Now if I cut my finger and I see blood, I can't take it. I can't take it.
Well, see, I bet you could. And I think a lot of it is, you know, what you get used to, what you're immersed in all the time. And there's a long process in developing physicians and surgeons, you know, and it I think everybody goes through adjustment periods.
But I did think this was a great way to sort of get into the entire subject of surgery in general that you are able to write about so well in the book. Take us really into the operating room.
Well, thank you. Part of what I wanted to accomplish was for people to kind of see that world. See what is happening, what kind of diseases are going on, and what kind of injuries are occurring. But I also wanted, for the readers to also recognize, seeing these things, just how fragile life is. We often take it for granted, and we live in a kind of sterile world anymore, where we're very separated from death and dying and that sort of thing. And yet, if you're on those front lines in a modern American medical center, you're seeing it all the time. And you recognize that it is so fragile. It can all be turned upside down in a split second. You know, if you live near a hospital, every time you hear the helicopter pass over, that's somebody's life. That's a whole family's life and all their friends and connections being turned upside down. And so part of it was to also see and feel what the patients are experiencing and how they ended up there and what how devastating it is, so that we all learn to kind of cherish what we have and really make the most of what we have and not take it for granted.
Well, you do that. And with Ryan, you know, as you say, he's taking it all so deeply into him, and you worry about him. You know, you know that it's just overwhelming. And the whole seeing ghosts, there's right away this feeling that you want to protect him somehow. You wish he wouldn't have to, you know, go through anything.
Yeah, with the ghost side of it all, and him encountering really an escalating slate of ghosts, I wanted the readers to be able to consider, well, could these be real? Are these real, or is he losing his mind, and play with that idea as well? But then I also wanted them to think about, well, what's actually more scary, the supernatural world or the natural world of what Ryan's experiencing? But he's flawed, and I don't want him to be a superhero. You know, he's flawed. He is deeply immersed in this. There's probably, you know, significant reasons for it, reasons to kind of need to be a heroic person. But he is not very good at his own emotional intelligence or what we call self-compassion and his own self-care, and he really doesn't listen to the people around him telling him he needs to take better care of himself, everywhere from his wife to his friends to professionals. And so it just gets deeper and deeper for him.
Well, you know, one of the things I was wondering, how, now for you, and thinking about it, what do you feel about this robotic surgery?
I think medicine is probably going to go through some major, what they might call, disruptions. I heard you talking with one of your other guests in past interviews some about AI, but AI, when you really think of it, I really wonder how long it's going to be before you're able to kind of wake up and say, hey, talk to your computer and say, hey, I don't feel so good today. And the computer starts asking you the symptoms, and you put your finger in some sort of sensor, and it can do all your blood chemistries and all. And then the computer says, oh, you have COVID. Here, let's get you some Paxlovid or something like that, and actually treat you. So I have no doubt that there's going to be huge disruptions in the way we practice primary care. And I used to tease my residents about this. The residents are neurosurgical trainees. I would tell them, don't get all smug, because the world of robotics is getting more and more fine-tuned, and probably will be someday where a robotic system can do it better than a surgeon can. And we already use robotics in quite a few of our surgeries. It doesn't actually do the surgery. It just gets us to the places where we want to do it, where in the old days we would use dead reckoning, if you will. Those days are coming, and anything that makes the surgeries less traumatic for the patients and anything that makes the surgeries safer for the patients, I'm all for. But it's going to take a while.
So when you decided to write this book, did the idea of the ghost's involvement come immediately? I mean, or did you just want to write a novel about a doctor first?
Yeah, I think I've always wanted to write more about the actual life in neurosurgery. But since I was a kid, I was pretty immersed in the supernatural or paranormal world through my mother and grandmother, and read, a billion books as kids, ghost stories and that sort of thing, and watched all the scary movies and all that. Probably since a child, I wanted to write ghost stories. So it actually, to me, ended up meshing well, because I said to myself, if the character is going insane, his interface with so much death and tragedy, it might be a natural psychotic, a natural break in reality to start thinking you're seeing people who have died. But I also thought, okay, what if we take the tack that the ghosts are real? Well, maybe somebody who spends so much time right on the edge of people's death, like a brain surgeon. And in the book, we talk about it being a bridge between life and death. Well, the surgeon is there, right there on the bridge, watching quite a few people go over, trying to snag a few and pull them back to the living. Well, if you were the ghost, maybe you would see him as somebody fairly familiar and, somebody easier to reach out to and touch or influence or communicate with, or something like that. So anyway, to me, it became relatively straightforward to blend the two worlds. And I think, the crux of it was that there's just so much death and dying involved.
Well, you handle the sort of the difficult parts very well. As I said, I enjoyed particularly the operating room. You explain it in a very a way that everybody can understand. And I think the writing is just excellent. So I don't know if you've born to write novels, but after now that you're retired, you certainly have another career for yourself if you want to continue writing.
Oh, well, you are too kind, but that warms my heart coming from you. So thank you so much. Yeah, I have two other novels kind of percolating right now. One I actually wrote before this, but this one just all of a sudden kind of came bursting out. I was like, I became kind of obsessed about getting this done, and it actually, in the beginning, came out, 260,000 words. So I did a lot of editing.
Well, I think this book it's beautifully written and a great read. It's called Death's Pale Flag, and it's by Gary Simmons. Do you have a website you want people
to? I do. It's it is my name, just Gary R. Simmons, but Simmons is spelled S-I-M-O-N-D, D as in dog, S. So Gary R. S-I-M-O-N-D-S.com.
Okay, and
so
people,
it's pretty easy.
And it's available online. It's a fine read. You'll enjoy it, and it opens up. I think you do start questioning: is he seeing ghosts, or perhaps, you know, so many people have these death experiences where they come back and they're telling you there are really ghosts in the room. So you never know, people. You should read this book, Death's Pale Flag. And thank you again, Dr. Simmons, for being on Joy on Paper.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so very much for having me.
Well, I think, you know, now you can throw in, for the next book, you might have a mystery. You can do all sorts of things. Doctors see so many things in hospitals that I'm sure you can have a lot of different books coming out, okay? And you'll be back here on Joy on Paper.
Sounds perfect.
Okay. Special thanks to Kim Dower for sending me this book and for sending you to Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
A great book. I just really had fun reading this book. Bye-bye.